Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2022 Home Education Conference held in Morristown, Tennessee.
So I'm David Spigarelli, as she said, and the title of the talk is 529 Tricks for College Savers. And after I had submitted everything, my wife said, you know, it reads like there's 529 tips you're going to be giving, which in an hour, that's about one every 5 seconds. And that's you know, if you were expecting that many tips, I'm going to disappoint you. But I do have kind of 10, to me, like they're big tricks about using 529s to pay for college. That hopefully will be able to help you in your voyage to help your kids. So I'm a father of six. My two oldest will be at BYU this fall. College is not cheap, that's for sure. As she said, I'm a software engineer. I'm not a financial expert. I'm not like a tax advisor. I'm a dad who's in the trenches trying to help his kids make it through college without a big mountain of debt on the end of it. But I love talking and thinking about personal finance things, and so this is kind of, I don't know. Actually, when I was asked to speak, I'm also speaking tomorrow morning on cybersecurity. When I was asked to speak, I'm like, well, yeah, I could speak on that, but I'd also really like to speak about 529. So I don't know how much, maybe by raise of hands, how many have heard of a 529? Okay, how many actually have opened a 529? Okay, all right, so there's some people that know a little bit what they're doing, and other people that are like curious about what a 529 is. So to kind of just briefly explain what a 529 is, it's a little bit like a Roth IRA in the sense that you put money in that's after you've already paid tax on it. And then you get tax-free growth and tax-free withdrawals when you use it for eligible education expenses. So it's kind of like a Roth IRA in the sense that, like, you know, once you put it in, then you don't have to pay tax on it again. It's also a lot like a 401k in the sense that you put it in and you just can't invest it in anything you want. There's actually kind of a list of things that you can invest in depending on which plan you choose. Just like your 401k or other kind of workplace thing, you choose that out of a list of it. So we live in Virginia, so a lot of that my experience has been with Virginia's plan. I've also actually my very first 529 was when we lived in Washington State, and I opened one in Ohio. So I have a little bit of experience, but a lot of my examples will be kind of drawn from the from Virginia. So in the presentation notes, I have a slide that kind of as an example of five different investments that are in the Virginia plan that kind of give you an idea of how they work. So Virginia's plan has one that's like a basically where you're paying tuition prepaid of where you every year they have like, well, here's how much like a unit of tuition costs, and then you can like basically buy units of tuition, and then when your student goes to college, then basically you cash it out to pay for tuition. They also have what are called target date funds, where you basically you say, hey, this is when my student will be entering college. And then what they do is they basically balance it between stocks and bonds, and they kind of have what's called a glide path. That basically, by the time your student is in college, then it's in the safe stuff that won't like be really volatile. But when they're really young, it's in the you know kind of more volatile but a lot better return kind of category. So if you really want simplicity, you can just choose a target date fund, put your money in there based on when your kids can be in college, and it'll be pretty, they kind of take care of like the actual investment piece. But if you want more hands-on, but if you want to have more control over it, you can choose several different other options. Like you can say, hey, I want to put everything in like a stock market fund, or I want to put things in a bond market, a bond fund. And then they have some that are also kind of balanced between there. So if you're like, yeah, I kind of am a little more aggressive, or I'm a little more conservative, then there's those options as well. In Virginia's plan, there's like about 26 different options. So like chances are one of those will probably meet your needs, as well as like if you are someone who gets really high stress when the market is like all over the place, then you know they have some options that might make it so you can sleep better at night and stuff. Okay. Every 529 plan kind of has very similar kind of menu of choices and stuff. Okay. So now, 529s are typically sponsored by the states. Actually, every state has at least one except for Wyoming. I'm assuming it's because there's, you know, like such a low population that they said, hey, you know, why don't you use a plan from some other state? But just because your state has a plan doesn't mean you have to stay with your state's plan. So for example, when we lived in Washington, Washington has no state income tax, and so there was no advantage for me using a 529 from Washington. So actually I went to, you know, like the Ohio plan, and I said, oh, that has really good investment options, low fees, I'll just choose that. And then when we moved to Virginia, I ended up using some of the Virginia plans because there's actually some benefits of using the home state plan in some circumstances, okay? There's also kind of a pivot on advisor-directed plans versus a self-directed plan. So if you are confident in your ability to, like, you know, to save and to put it in there, you can just go with a directed, you know, with a direct plan, which basically means that you are the one who's choosing what investment you're choosing, you know, that you're going to put it in, and you're taking care of, like, all of the, it's self-directed. Or maybe you have a financial advisor. Maybe that kind of scares you, and you're like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'd rather have a financial advisor help me. There's also advisor directed plans and stuff where you can go to your financial advisor, and they can kind of help you. Typically, you end up paying a little bit higher fee because, of course, you're paying for the advisor's advice in doing that, okay? There's also, I mentioned the prepaid plan. Like, you know, with Virginia, they have a prepaid option, but it's not technically a prepaid plan. There's 9 different states that they actually have what's called a prepaid tuition plan. And that is, you can basically pay at today's rates of tuition for what it is in the future. So everyone knows that tuition has been going up, and you know, it's everyone's worried about, well, what's it gonna be like when my kid finally is in college? So these states, you know, they kind of cater to that in the sense of, like, you don't have to worry about it, you just basically pay for tuition today and you'll be able to do it in the future. Typically, those plans, though, do require either you or the beneficiary to be a resident of that state. Yeah.
So I just have a quick question. So on that one, that's like the prepaid tuition one.
Yeah.
Does that mean that our child has to go to that in-state for that prepaid tuition?
No. So the question was, if you do a prepaid tuition, do you have to use a school in that state? And the answer is no. But there's kind of some caveats there. So I didn't have it on here, but I'll just talk about the prepaid one briefly. So how the prepaid works is if your child goes to an in-state school, then it will pay tuition at a given, you know, at that school kind of thing. For example, Washington State, that's all they have, is they have a prepaid plan. And how that worked is basically you buy tuition units, and then they would let you cash them out at the rate of the highest tuition for the in-state school, which was the University of Washington in Seattle. And so basically, if you went somewhere else and it was cheaper, then you'd actually get more for your tuition dollars. But if you went to the University of Washington and you bought enough credits for 4 years there, then basically you had 4 years of tuition there. Yeah.
Did you have to go to a Washington State school?
So for the prepaid tuition, yes. But if you didn't, then what they would do is they would cash it out. Exactly. So if you had a student that you said, I want to go to BYU, then what they would do is they'd say, okay, if you're out of state, then we'll basically convert it at this fixed percentage to go there, which typically you're better off actually using like one of the prepaid savings, not the prepaid side, the savings ones than the prepaid one in that case. But if you're pretty confident your child will go to the in-state school, then yeah. So any other questions on that? I'm happy to take questions during it, so if you guys, because I don't know, I'll just blow right through it if you don't ask questions. Yeah, so this is, this kind of goes to your question. 529s are very flexible. And how they're flexible is you don't have to participate in your home state plan. You can actually use a plan from any state. Now, there's benefits sometimes by using the home state plan, but you don't have to do that. Another thing about flexibility is you can use a 529 at any college or university that accepts federal student aid. So if you can get a federal loan to go there, then you can use your 529 there as well. Doesn't matter if it's in-state or out-of-state. It doesn't matter if it's a private school. BYU, you can totally use a 529 at BYU. At Ricks as well, not Ricks, BYU Idaho as well. And then also, you don't have to use your 529 just for undergraduate. You can actually use it for graduate school as well. So if you end up having extra money in there, and your child just has to go to graduate school, you can definitely use it for that as well. Professional school, medical school, stuff like that. So, okay. So one of the things that makes a 529 kind of special, and actually in my mind, one of the biggest reasons that you'd use a 529 is for the state tax benefits. So I said before that it's like a Roth IRA where you put money in after you pay tax, and then you get the tax benefits after that for growth and for withdrawals. But some states will actually give you a state income tax deduction or a credit. And it varies widely between the states. And actually, in the presentation, I have kind of a map of the United States. And all the blue states give some sort of tax deduction or credit. And then the orange states will give you the tax deduction or credit regardless of what plan you use. So for example, in Arizona, they actually don't care what plan you use. There's an Arizona plan, but if you use, say, the Ohio plan, or if you use, like, the Virginia plan, then they will still give you the same tax benefit. All the blue states, you actually have to use the in-state plan in order to get that benefit. Now, to kind of illustrate what that benefit looks like, so in Virginia, the top income tax bracket is 5.75%. So basically, if you put $1,000 into, if you live in Virginia and you put $1,000 into a Virginia 529, then you'd get back $57.50 at your tax time when you're filing your taxes. So that right there is like kind of this benefit but you get basically free money from the state. So that kind of brings me to my trick number one, and that is to maximize your state tax benefits. And how you can do that is passing everything through your 529 if you're in a state that has like an unlimited. Many states actually limit it to about like, I don't know, between $4,000 to $10,000. Sometimes it's limited per taxpayer, sometimes it's limited per beneficiary. In Virginia, it's kind of a little funny because they limit you to $4,000 per account. And an account is defined as the account owner and the beneficiary. So with 26 different options, I can open up 26 different accounts. My wife can open up 26 different accounts, all for the same beneficiary. So in effect, it's kind of unlimited. Other states are like, for example, in Utah, they actually have it inflation index, but they say, hey, every taxpayer, if you're a joint taxpayer, then you can deduct up to, it's about $4,000. So you're maxed out with a credit of, I think it's like 100. No, let's see, it's 260, I think, for a married couple. So some states have a much more generous kind of thing for that. So my second trick is, even if you've never opened a 529, if you live in a state that gives you a tax benefit, many of the states, they actually don't require you to have the money in there a certain period of time. So for example, when my daughter, Abigail, started college, I hadn't maxed out everything in my 529, but I realized, wow, I could actually, if I pass the tuition payment through my 529 on its way to BYU, even though it's only in there just a few weeks, I maximize my state tax benefit. And so that is kind of my trick number two, is to even last minute contributions can kind of maximize that. Now, of course, if you can, you want to put it in as long as possible because you want all that growth. But even last minute savers can kind of get benefits from that. And this brings me to my tip number three. So now, getting loans to pay for school is a very common thing. I think the number is something around, I won't quote a number from my top of my head, but a lot of students have to get loans and a lot of families have to get loans. And so if you do get a loan, you could, again, pass that through your 529. You get your disbursement from the loan, and then you make a deposit in your 529, and then you withdraw it immediately to basically pay for tuition or whatever else you need to pay for education-wise with that loan, okay? And again, the reason why you would do that is to maximize that state tax benefit. And by the way, everything I'm telling you is 100% legal. Like, now, there are some states that they do put restrictions on that last-minute contribution kind of stuff. So, for example, in Utah, if your student is under the age of 19, then you get the tax credit. If they're over age 19, then no tax credit. And again, I mean, they're trying to encourage savers to be doing it when the student is young and kind of keep it in there for years. Another example is Minnesota. So Minnesota, what happens is they take all the contributions you made during the year and all of the withdrawals, and then if it's a net contribution, then they'll give you the tax credit on that. So they kind of have like a little bit of accounting there. Virginia, they actually don't care. They're just like, yeah, just go and put your money in. And they're hoping in, you know, that you're putting in when the child is young and then taking out later. But last minute withdrawals are totally work there. Okay. All right. And then my trick number four is many students have help from other relatives. It's not just always on the parent's shoulder. So if you have like a grandparent that wants to make a contribution, then you could take that contribution and run it through your 529 as well to get that tax state, you know, that state tax benefit. So for example, my mom, she wanted to help, and I've been trying to encourage her to do her own 529, because I'm like, hey mom, you're in Utah, there's a tax benefit for you. And she's like, I don't want to deal with that. So she just gave the money to me, and I'm like, okay, well, I will deposit it in the 529 and then I'll withdraw it. So that kind of maximizes that state tax benefit. All right, so I will get to the using your 529 in just a minute, but I wanted to kind of talk about some of the other things that there's other ways to save for college as well that many people use. So how many have heard of a Coverdell ESA? Okay, so a Coverdell ESA is a lot like a 529 that it enables you to make contributions, again, after tax, and then when you take the money out to pay for education, you get tax-free growth, you get tax-free withdrawals. The main difference there is a 529 generally has extremely high limits compared to a Coverdell. So a Coverdell is like $2,000 per year, and that's it. And you also can't make contributions once the child is older than age 18. So Coverdells have the advantage, though, that you can invest in basically whatever you want to. It's just like a Roth IRA. You can do individual stocks or whatever if that's your cup of tea. Well, cup of tea. That's not right. This is not the right audience for that metaphor. But yeah, herbal tea. That's right. At the same time, and they also have income limits too. So that's another thing that 529 does not have is if you make over a certain amount of dollars, you cannot contribute to a Coverdell, whereas with 529, there is no limits. So if that's also something that is part of your situation, that might help. Another way that people save is with the UTMA or UTGA. Those are the Uniform Transfer to Minor Accounts. And basically that is where you are investing on the behalf of a child. And at a certain age, that child then becomes the owner of that account. Unlike a 529, where a 529 is basically the account owner, you, by opening the account, you'll always be in control. There's not like a certain magical age where your child all of a sudden can withdraw it all and go buy a fancy hot rod or something like that. Not that your kids would do that, and I don't think my kids would do that either. But it's just that with a 529, you have control. You could transfer that money to a different, to one of your other children if you needed to, if you had too much. But that's a difference. Roth IRAs can actually be used for education as well. So if you have a Roth IRA and you've been saving over the years, you could also withdraw the contributions without paying any tax. Or the earnings if it's for a qualified educational expense. But the catch is that when you do that withdrawal, you do have to pay income tax, federal income tax, and state income tax on that the earnings portion of that. And the other thing is that an IRA, you actually can't use it for all the same things. So for example, I'm going to get to it, but you can buy a computer actually for your student with a 529, but you couldn't do that with a Roth IRA. Yeah, question.
I was just going to ask, and I don't know if you addressed it earlier, with the 529, can that also go towards like a trade school, those kind of?
Yeah, so the question is, can a 529 be used for a trade school or a registered apprenticeship? And the answer is yes, and I'll get to that later. So even if your child's not, and decides not to go to college, there's trade school options and there's apprenticeships that you can also do, use a 529 for, okay? All right. So and then the last one is just a regular brokerage account. There's nothing super special about a 529 in the sense of you could just open a brokerage account and be buying, index funds and stocks and stuff like that. The big advantage with the 529 is you get that tax-free growth and the tax-free withdrawals, whereas with a regular brokerage account, you'd have to pay, either capital, you have to pay capital gains when you took it out, and you'd also be paying tax on the dividends as the years kind of go by. All right, so let's talk about using it and what you can use a 529 for. So you can use a 529 for what is for anything that is an eligible college expense, and that is defined as obviously tuition and mandatory fees. That's definitely an eligible expense. Required supplies and equipment, And required, I'm not sure exactly what that means, but it's required. So, like, you know, you probably couldn't use your 529 on buying, like, you know, note-taking materials for your student. But if the college required something to attend, like, you know, maybe a lab fee or something like that, you could, you know, definitely pay, you know, something like that. Yeah, question.
So my son's on the ballroom dance team at BYU. He has to buy Latin shoes, run to tuck, stuff like that. Would it go towards that?
I would assume so. I mean, if he's required to do that, let's see. Actually, I should probably take that back because that actually, I'm not a tax advisor, so like let me just caveat that. But one of the things that they specifically call out is you can't do it for extracurricular activity kind of things. So would you, you know, if it's part of a class, then yes.
Well, no, because you can't major in ballroom dancing, but he does have a dance minor, and he does take classes, and he has the team, you know, just stuff like that.
Yeah.
He does have the classes.
Well, I think if it's part of a class, like then yes. If it's an extracurricular activity that he's doing kind of on his own with the school, those don't count. Like for example, you couldn't pay for your BYU football tickets using your 529 because that's like an extracurricular kind of thing, even though it's part of the university kind of thing. But I really don't know about that one. I think you'd have to figure out if that is a required thing for, you know, the class or something
right.
like that. The third thing you can use it for is room and board. So as long as the student is at least half-time or more, then you can pay for room and board. So in the dorms or even off campus. And that includes, you know, their groceries. That includes their rent, of course. But that's also what you can use your 529 on. And then the fourth thing I want to call out was computers and computer equipment, and even the internet service that they have, as long as it's used primarily by the student for educational purposes. If you actually read like the U.S. code for this, it's like they specifically say no gaming stuff unless it's actually for a course or class, right? So you can't just go, you know, buy a fancy computer gaming rig and count that. But for example, when my daughter Abby, when she went to college, you know, she bought a laptop to use, and we used our 529 to pay for that. And we'll do the same thing for Hannah when she starts in the fall as well. All right, and then the other component of eligible is the school itself. And so you can't just use this anywhere. You can only use it at a school that is a Title IV school. If it has like a finance, you know, so there's actually a lookup on the U.S. Department of Education. They have like a lookup of schools, and you can find their little six-digit code. It's the same kind of code you would put on like their ACT scores or on their, you know, AP kind of things. I'm not sure if it's exactly the same one, but it's the same kind of idea. If the school receives, like, you know, if you can get a student loan at that school from the government, then you can use your 529 there. So that's what an eligible school is. Okay, now I want to call out some things you cannot use your 529 on. You can't use it on, like, the application fee. You can't use it on, like, testing fees. So taking the ACT to go to college, that's something you cannot use your 529 on. You can't use it on transportation. That includes getting to school or while they're at school, like, you know, a car or something like that. You can't use it for things like health insurance, extracurricular activities, or personal expenses. And then if the student's not a full-time student, then you can't use it for, half-time or more, then you can't use it for room and board either. So if they're just going like part-time, then the room and board doesn't count. So my trick number five, and I just want to call this out, is use it to buy that computer because it's like a little discount. If you have a state tax benefit, then, you know, basically it's a discount off the computer. Okay, so now when you use your 529, there's kind of three options for how you use it. So with the 529, you can often pay the institution directly. So for example, with BYU, you basically tell your 529, hey, my student's going to BYU. I put in their student ID, and then I can tell them, pay the tuition directly to BYU. So that's the first option. The second option is you can pay for the expense yourself and then reimburse yourself out of the 529. So then the third thing is you can actually reimburse your student. So for example, my daughter who's living off campus, she's paying her own rent, and then I'm helping her pay part of that. And what I do is I just tell the 529, pay her directly. And you can set it up with like direct deposit and stuff like that. So those are kind of the three options: pay the institution, pay yourself, or pay your student. Generally, you can't actually like tell the 529, hey, I bought a laptop here, can you go pay that for, you know, place, or here's the place for rent, you know, can you go pay that? They'll do the institution and yourself, but they won't do anyone else. So that kind of gets me to the next trick. I say that December is for withdrawals because the rules with the 529 are is that you have to take the money out in the same year that the expense occurred. So if you're paying tuition in January, by the time December 31st rolls around, you need to have taken that money out to pay for that in order to get the tax benefit of the tax-free withdrawal. And so that means that, like, when I paid tuition for my daughter in January, I have a whole another 12 months that I could just leave the money in there growing, although for the last couple months, the market hasn't been, like, cooperating with that. But if you have it, like, you know, like, basically it's another 12 months you could have it in there, as long as you take it out by the end of the year. Okay, so let's talk about financial aid. So a lot of times I hear people asking, well, wait, if I put money in a 529, doesn't that hurt my financial aid? Isn't the school going to give me less money if I do that? And the answer is kind of a little bit, but not very much. So a 529 counts in the same way that a checking account does, or a savings account, or any other asset that you have that's not a retirement account. And how that counts is basically for if you put in $1,000 in your 529, and that's what your balance was when your child enrolls, then it could reduce your aid by about $56, about 5.64%. And how this works is there's what's called the expected family contribution, where it's basically it's this number that the government says we expect you, based on your income and your assets, this is how much you should be helping your student go to school. And so it's a combination of how much money you make, how much money your student makes, how much you have in you know, savings and other assets, and then how much your student has in assets. And then there's all these like complicated kind of equations, and out pops this number. This is the expected family contribution. Now, if the school you're going to, either your student's going to, I keep saying you're going to because it feels like you're going to it when you're paying for all that. They'll have how much the tuition is and how much they expect a freshman to be paying at that school. And then you subtract the expected family contribution, and that's how much need that you have. So that can qualify you for like needs-based grants or needs-based scholarships. So one thing that they don't account in the expected family contribution is retirement savings. So if you have retirement savings, like in IRAs and 401ks and other kinds of things, you want to maximize that in the years before your student goes, because then that's going to get you the most needs-based aid, okay? Because they don't include that at all in that calculation. So now, so that's my trick number 7, is to maximize those. So trick number 8 is working with scholarships. The way that the law, the way the rules are set up for scholarships is you aren't penalized for, let's see, how do I put this? So you have your gross eligible expenses. So that's all your tuition, all your room and board, all your expenses, your computer, stuff like that, okay? And then what you do is you subtract out any scholarships or grants. And there's also a couple tax credits here, too. There's the American Opportunity Tax Credit and the Lifetime Learning Credit. You subtract all those out, and whatever is left, that little piece, you don't pay any income tax on, and you don't pay any penalties on it. Now, for the other part that was subtracted, if you take money out of your 529, then you end up paying income tax. And so you can kind of look at that as like you got tax-free growth, but then when you took it out, it's basically if you had a traditional 401k and you ended up taking it out at that point, and so you pay regular income tax on it, but you get the tax-free growth during that period. So my advice is to not worry about the scholarships and stuff like that. It's great, it's free money, and if you have 529 money you're taking out as well, then you're just going to be paying a little bit of tax on it. So if you have, like, you know, one of your children gets a scholarship and the other ones don't, like, you could definitely, like, transfer, you know, so basically it's you're changing the beneficiary to one of your children, or even to yourself, to, you know, they have a whole list of what is considered a relative of that beneficiary, that you can change it to that person and use it that way. Another question, HJ?
When you say that you pay yourself and things like that, you're going to get a computer and stuff, like, do you have to keep the receipt and all these things? I was like, how do they know that it's coming? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally does.
You pay yourself to buy the computer, but how do they know that was listed for that child and it was not for, I mean, like, how much paperwork am I going to have to keep to prove that this has gone to that one student?
Yeah, so they don't, So if you were audited, then they would probably expect to see those kind of, you know, that kind of record keeping and stuff. So what I do for my children is I basically have a little spreadsheet that I keep track of, like, what have I paid for their expenses, how much have I taken out, and then I just keep that with my tax forms, you know, after I file them kind of thing. So it's, you know, it's just, it's part of the record keeping that you have to do. But it's a great question of, like, you know, how do they know, did you spend the money on a gaming rig versus, you know, a computer for, like, you know, class kind of thing, right? And so what happens at the end of the, during tax season, first of all, when you contribute to your 529, you won't do anything with your federal taxes. The federal government doesn't care about contributions. If you get a state tax benefit, then usually there's a place on the state tax form that you'll end up filling that out. So, like, in Virginia, there's actually, I think it's the Virginia ADJ, like the adjustments to income and deductions, that you end up basically putting in, like, well, here's how much money I can contribute to 529s, and it subtracts out of your income. Now, when you take the money out, so you'll get two things. You'll get one from your from the college or university. It's like it's the 1098-T form, and it basically says how much tuition that you paid. It has information about how many scholarships or grants that you received from the institution. And then it will have a couple other details, but those are kind of the two main things, is how much you paid in tuition and how much you paid for the scholarships, not how much you paid, how much you got for the scholarships. It doesn't have anything in there about room and board. So even if you use the dorms at BYU, you're not going to get a tax form that says, well, here's how much you used, you know, how much you paid for the dorm experience, right? So that's something that you have to keep track of. Now, every college, they do what's called the cost of attendance. Where they say, for a freshman to come to our school, here's how much we would expect them to pay. And that includes tuition. That also includes the freshman living in the dorms. That also includes things like transportation and personal costs you can't use a 529 for. But they basically itemize out, like, what we expect a freshman to pay. And you can't go over those amounts. Now, tuition, you're not going to go over that because the school is not going to charge you more than what they're saying they're going to charge you. But the room and board one's kind of important. If your child lives off campus, you know, they can't live it up in a penthouse, you know, like, and then expect to get the full tax benefit. So you're kind of capped at that. And then, of course, the other expenses, like, they don't have anything about computer. So you could buy a really expensive computer. I mean, personally, I wouldn't, but there is no, like, definitive, like, number of how much you can spend on a computer purchase for the 529. There's just the guidelines about, like, you can only use it for education, you can't buy, you know, you can use it for software as long as it's educational in purpose, stuff like that. So, yeah, so no one's going to be following up on you unless you end up getting audited, and in that case, then they might, you know, ask for some records and, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah, so my trick number eight of the scholarships and 529s is ignore the scholarship, don't worry about it, you know, it's free money that you're going to get, and then just take out, you know, what you need from the 529, and you'll end up paying tax if it goes over that net kind of piece. All right, so then there's another question about using your 529 for groceries for your family. So this would be considered a non-eligible or a disqualified expense, right? Yeah, I know, of course. Yeah, you're just like, well, what are the edges here? What are the limits, right? So if you do, if you do, then you'll pay an additional 10% penalty on the earnings portion. So the contribution that you made to the 529, you won't pay any tax or penalty on that. It's just like a Roth IRA. You put the money in, you've already paid tax on it, you won't pay tax on it again. It's the earnings portion that your 529, you know, increased in value, that's what you would be paying the income tax and the penalty on. And again, it's after subtracting all those expenses and stuff like that, so it's only if you go over that. Now, most of the time, people aren't going to be going over that, so it's not, like, too big of a deal. But if it is, like, it's you know, I mean, you figure you got some tax-free growth out of that, and yeah, you know, you end up paying a little bit of a penalty, but I don't know. It's probably not something you have to worry about too much. But again, you don't want to be using it for, like, a bunch of things you didn't use before intentionally, because there is that penalty. Okay, so now I kind of want to talk about 529s and homeschooling, okay? So in 2017, there were some laws that changed about 529s that enabled you to use it for K-12 expenses. And of course, everyone who is homeschooling, they're like, I'd love any sort of help I can get at, like, you know, homeschooling my kids. I know in my county, in Virginia, I pay pretty high property tax, and I don't get very much out of that for educating my kids. Unfortunately, this doesn't work for homeschooling your kids. Like, you can't, you know, pay your, you know, you can't have tuition at the Van Damme Academy, which is what, and then use your 529 to pay for that, right? So it doesn't work for that, but there is something that it does work for. So a lot of homeschoolers that I'm aware of use independent study, and so they might use classes at BYU Idaho or other, you know, like community college, you know, kind of doing dual enrollment. And as long as the institution is a eligible for that Title IV federal student aid, you can use your 529 to help pay for that. So, for example, my oldest daughter, after she was done with high school and ready to go to BYU, we decided to have her do independent study for American Heritage over the summer. So that way, give her one more class that she didn't have to take at BYU when she got there. And I used my 529 to pay for that. It's an eligible institution, and so it qualified to use the 529. Okay. And you don't have to be a full-time student to use that. And you actually technically don't even have to be seeking a degree. As long as it is a eligible institution, you can do those independent study classes. So that's my trick number 10, is use your 529 for independent study, if that's what you want to do. So the question is there a income limit on the tax benefits for 529s? And so federally, no. So you do not. So they don't have any sort of income limit that you have to be below in order to make contributions. So, like for example, a Coverdell ESA, you do. Like I think the limit for a joint filer is like $180,000. If you make over that, you cannot make any contributions to a Coverdell ESA. 529, there is no limit on your federal taxes. Now, some states will do different things for the state income tax benefit. So, for example, in Oregon, if you make under a certain amount, then you only have to contribute, like, I think it's like around, I don't know, it's less than $1,000 to get the full maximum tax benefit. But as your income goes up, you have to contribute more in order to maximize that tax benefit. Up to, I think, at a certain point, they're like, we don't care how much you make after that. You only get this amount, but you have to contribute $6,000 to get that amount. So statewide, there is some income limits. In Virginia, there is no income limit. Virginia, that doesn't care how much you make in order to get that tax benefit. Well, I mean, there's the federal law about how the federal government treats it, but then, yeah, the states will treat it, how the states treat it is just about the tax benefit from the state. So, like, they still will not charge you income tax on it, like, when you take it out. Like, every state is uniform in that respect. Because the federal government saying, states can't charge you income tax on eligible expenses. But whether you get the benefit or the full benefit or, like, how the benefit is treated, it definitely varies, based on the state. And it changes all the time, too. So, for example, New Jersey, before this year, they didn't have any tax benefit for contributions, even though they have a state income tax. But this year they said, okay, we're going to start doing that. And so they have a change in the law that you now get a tax benefit in New Jersey kind of thing. In some states, there is no tax benefit. For example, Florida and Texas and Tennessee, they don't have a state income tax, so you don't get any tax benefit from contributing. So there was a question about trade schools. So in 2019, the laws were expanded again to allow 529s to be used for trade schools and for registered apprenticeships. They had to be registered with the Department of Labor. And again, it's one of those kind of things that you can go look up the school code. So for example, I looked up one that was in Tennessee that is it's for hairdressing and cosmetology, yeah. And they would accept federal student loans, and they have a whole little number and everything, and so you can use your 529 to pay for that trade school and stuff. I haven't looked into the trade schools a whole lot, but the answer is yes, you can use it for that. But not every state, again, this goes back to the state thing, not every state allows that same thing. So for example, in California, they're like, no, it can only be used for higher education. And if so they have not conformed to the federal law, its rules. And so if you use it in like California, then you would actually end up paying income tax, state income tax on it, and you would also pay a 2.5% penalty on the earnings portion again. So I don't know, that's California for you. So when should you not use your 529? So I thought it'd be kind of important here. So if you aren't already like maxing out your retirement options, you should probably do that before you start using a 529. And the reason is because, first of all, that's going to reduce how much by contributing to your retirement accounts, it'll make it so you're eligible for more needs-based aid and stuff. And I'm going to say it, but I'm going to immediately caveat. Also, no one will loan you money for retirement. Well, it's not quite true because, of course, you can get reverse mortgages and stuff like that. But the idea is that you should take care of your own financial needs going forward. Not only is it better for your financial aid, but it's also better for you before you use the 529s. Now, that goes back to that whole last-minute contributions. You can still do the last-minute contributions and get the full benefit of the 529, depending on what state you live in. So that's good. All right, and then the other case where you should use a 529, even if your state doesn't give you a tax benefit, is if you have really bad willpower and you're like, I really want to help my kids, but I know that if I put that in this account, I'm going to end up using it for whatever. So that might also be a good opportunity, because a 529 kind of increases that amount of friction for you using it for something else that you probably don't want to use for, but you do want to use it for. All right, I have some examples. So in Virginia, I already talked about Virginia. It has virtually unlimited contributions because they have so many different types of options of accounts you can open. And so to give a kind of example, if you put $4,000 into account, you would get back $230 in state tax. In Virginia, you have to use that state, the in-state plan in order to actually get that benefit. And again, spouses, for example, last year, my wife and I both opened separate accounts in order to maximize the particular investments that I wanted to use. And it also works for last minute savers, but they don't have any sort of limit on how much you can, how long you have to have the money in, or they don't do what Minnesota does of subtracting your withdrawals from your contributions. I already mentioned Utah. So in Utah, they have, 4.95% tax. And so if you were to contribute just over $4,000, your maximum credit would be $207. And that's per taxpayer. So if you have six beneficiaries like me, you're still capped at that $4,000. It does not work for last minute savers because, again, they have that rule of the child has to be younger than 19 in order to use that. And so that's kind of their limit. Another example is North Carolina. So North Carolina, there's many people from there. Even though they have a state income tax, they have no state tax benefits. So they're like, yeah, you can get the tax-free growth, you can get the tax-free withdrawals, but we're not going to give you any sort of benefit on the contribution piece. And in that case, if you have a state that does that, then you have the ability to look anywhere in the nation. So for example, California actually has a pretty good plan as far as fees. So in North Carolina, the total stock market one, it ends up being about 0.3% of a fee, whereas if you went to California, it's 0.06%. And so over time, that kind of adds up. And so you could definitely just say, I'm going to use California's plan instead of my home state of North Carolina. Ohio is another example. It's about 4% in their highest state income tax bracket. If you were to put in $4,000, then you would get back $160. And they do it per beneficiary. So if you have 6 or 10 or whatever many kids, then you could, make that contribution for each one of them during that year. It also works for last minute savers, of where you can, they don't have any sort of limit on how long you have to keep it in there. And they also have what's called unlimited carry forward. So if you ended up putting in more than that for a student, then you could take the extra and carry it to the next tax year and keep doing that until you've exhausted that. So May 29th is 529, right? And a lot of states will also run promotions or other kinds of things around that time. So for example, in Virginia, last May, they had, if you open an account, and I think it was you had to put in $25, then they would match it with another $25. And so that's an example of where I got my wife to we signed up for 6 accounts, even though I had already had accounts, I signed up for another 6 accounts and different options, and I had her sign up for 6 more just to get that free money. And then to make it even sweeter, in April, they had another special where they said, open an account, and here's a gift code that you get a free $25 just by opening the account. And that one actually was not limited to a state resident. So I sent it to all of my siblings. I said, hey, you can get in on this and just, create an account. Here's the code. None of them wanted to do it. I don't know why. But to me, it was roughly about $600, because not only did we open accounts for the kids, but I also opened one for Rachel. She opened one for me. And then I got my mom to do it for all my kids as well. It's just free money. So at the end of May, you want to pay attention to your state's plan. They might have some sort of option of some sort of little bonus or plan or something like that. Other states have other kind of things. So for example, in Maryland, if you they have basically they'll match your contribution. And so if you put in a certain amount of money, then they'll give you a certain amount of money into the account as well. So That's even better than a state tax, you know, deduction or credit. Yeah. So the question is you know, once they're done with school, what happens to the 529? You know, roughly. Yeah, the 529, you can use it for grad school. You can just, you know, actually, you could change the account owner to be them. So if you wanted to roll it on to like grandkids or something like that, if there's money left over, you can totally do that.
Yeah,
and you can change the beneficiary. So, you know, let's say your oldest is done and there's money left over, you could then transfer the beneficiary to another one of your children and stuff. Yeah. All right. I'm also writing a book about this. So my shameless plug, and it's going to come out in like 2 weeks. So there's actually a link inside the show notes, so to speak. Thank you for coming. I hope that was helpful. I hope that some of the tips were helpful.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.